The Senate firefight in the war on cash. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, world's latest post covering finance and property news. I'm joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party today. Hi, Robbie. Nice to see you again.
Hi. Hi, Martin. Good to see you.
Well, another very, very important twist and turn in the story of the fight for cash and the stupidity within the Parliament, particularly in the Senate.
Absolutely. So we've got some, a news report you're not going to get on mainstream media because they're not interested in this, but there was a fascinating exchange last night in the Australian Senate, all about cash. And we should go through it, but I think the real news story here is the effectiveness of people power, because this was like a sleeper issue and kind of a boring bureaucratic it's legislation by regulation, right? So, and it's for nerds, and it could have easily been ignored and missed, but as we do, we were able to fire up the people who are concerned about this and who follow us online and with our collaborators, people like Dale Webster, who deserves credit because she sort of blew the whistle on what we were trying to defeat here. Plus Jason Bryce from Cash Welcome, etc. We, in 24 hours, we bombarded Parliament with, and specifically the Senate, with phone calls and emails. And it created a dramatic shift in the voting intention and a complete freak out by the government. And that's what was on display last night in the Senate, and people need to know about it.
And it's just worth saying, of course, that this relates back to the government's attempt to introduce this cash, a bill, which is, as we've said previously, very, very weak, really only aligns to a relatively small number of large companies. It doesn't really solve the fundamental question in terms of availability of cash. But of course, everyone was sort of looking the other way. And of course, we've got the Gulf War, and we've got the ABC on strike as well today. So they won't be talking about this either, right? So we are the alternative. But this is a really, really important issue, not only because, of course, cash is really important. And as we've argued, it's really important to keep cash available because it is critical in a crisis. It's critical from a freedom of use and speech perspective, but also because the tricks and bat flips that were done in the Senate to try and actually deal with it tells us something very important about how democracy isn't actually working very well.
Well, that's true, and that'll shock people. But first, let me say what it also tells you is it reinforces what you just said, how important this issue is, because the government's reaction to the possibility of losing a vote on this issue is so extreme. It proves how important it is, right? And so, anyway, let's go through it. So, what they did was they put up a cash acceptance mandate in response to a bill put up 2 years ago by Andrew Gee, Bob Catter, and Dai Li, who are independents in the House of Representatives, and they put up this Keeping Cash Alive bill, and it was for a proper mandate, like many countries around the world have, where all businesses are required to accept cash. In this case of this Australian bill, it was up to $10,000 because that's like the AUSTRAC limit, right? So up to a reasonable amount of money and with only reasonable specific exemptions. But apart from that, across the board, all businesses must accept cash payments. That was what they put up. Jim Chalmers said to them, I will work with you on this. He took it, fed it through the banks, and they turned it into a pathetic fake mandate that applies to effectively 1% of businesses instead of all businesses, because it only applies to supermarkets and fuel retailers. It exempts all small businesses, which is like 98% of businesses off the bat, right? So you've gone from a mandate that applies to all businesses to one that applies to almost no businesses. Even then, the ones that apply to can seek exemptions if there aren't banking services readily available for them to bank cash. And it only applies between the hours of 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and it only applies up to $500. And back to the exemptions, Martin, that's the whole point of this, because this is what the government, the Jim Chalmers and Albanese put up in order to avoid the big issue, which is forcing the banks to provide services in exchange for how much the Australian taxpayer subsidises them. This all came out of the Senate inquiry on bank branch closures, which have been causing chaos all around the country. You and Dale helped to set that up. And it came up with, it was a great inquiry, 15 months, 650 submissions, 13 public hearings, produced a great report under Matt Canavan. We talked about this the other day when I was on your show. The recommendations are quite powerful, right? And they are that to make access to banking services and cash an essential service, and to establish an expert panel to investigate the feasibility of establishing a public bank, including one that operates through post offices, that could guarantee face-to-face banking services for all communities in Australia. And in doing so, it would put real competition into the banking system and force those banks that are now abandoning towns, not because they're losing money there, right? It's just because they're not making enough money there. So leaving those towns in the lurch, which, by the way, as we discussed in our last conversation, is much more serious right now because of this fuel crisis, because towns are running out of fuel, and the ones that have been condemned to driving hundreds of kilometers to the next town to do their banking, which in most cases, banking is kind of time sensitive. You've got to do something for a reason when you go to a bank, right? And if you, in towns like Robinvale, they've got no fuel to be even able to drive to the bank, right? And so this has all been caused by these banks being so bloody greedy that from their 30 plus billion dollars a year they share in profits, they don't want to spend a few billion dollars providing banking services, right? So that was the issue. Jim Chalmers was given this report. It's up to him to respond to it and implement it. And he's done everything to avoid it because he refuses to stand up to the banks. In fact, one of his confidants was the head of the banking association in Anna Bligh. And so the cash acceptance mandate he came up with is a typical example of what Labor calls an announceable. They know this cash thing is an issue. They've got to look like they're doing something, so they come up with the most piss-weak thing they could possibly do. Back to Dale Webster, because this is quite important. When they came up with this, not everybody saw it for what it was straight away. In fact, my initial reaction was to think, okay, baby steps, incremental, this is a step in the right direction. Dale Webster, who has spent years, as you know, documenting the real extent of bank closures across Australia and how damaging it's been, she immediately detected, hang on, this is going to be worse than no mandate because of this reason. Right now, it's the onus is on the individual business, even though they're under no obligation to accept cash. If they put up a sign saying they don't want to, there's nothing in Australian law to make them accept cash. There's a social obligation to accept cash. And it's up to them to explain to their customers why they don't. Most businesses want to accept cash because they're in business, they want money, right? It's just that the banks have made it harder and harder for them to handle that cash because they've got to drive so far to bank it now, right? So this what's keeping them accepting cash is their sense of individual obligation to their customers. By coming up with a mandate where the government decrees small businesses are exempt from, here's a mandate to accept cash, but small businesses are exempt. The onus is no longer on the individual business. They can say to their customers, don't blame us. The government says we don't have to. And they don't want to do that. But when the bank gets further and further away because those bastards keep closing them, it puts the small business in an impossible situation. And that Dale's point is this could hasten the demise of cash, not save it, right? So earlier this year, Senator Malcolm Roberts put up a motion for disallowance. And the reason he was able to do that is this mandate was not legislated. It was enacted through regulation. And we might have talked about this before, Martin, but if people don't know about this, this is an arcane part of how the parliamentary system works. They call these regulations the Henry VIII clauses because it actually goes back to the divine right of kings right, where you don't need to get the approval of Parliament to do something, as long as the Governor General in the cabinet endorses this power that you're about to announce, it has the effect of legislation, but it's through regulation. The only safeguard is that Parliament is able to vote to disallow it. So the thing comes into force straight away as soon as it's announced, but if within 15 days Parliament disallows it, it's no longer in force, right? And that is what Malcolm Roberts put up, a disallowance motion to disallow these regulations, with the objective of saying to Jim Chalmers, "You, this is fake. This is worse than nothing. Go back to the drawing board, respond to the Senate inquiry recommendations, and come up with a real mandate that will really save cash. We're not going to tolerate this pussyfooting around anymore." And that is what led to what happened last night, Martin, because it was fireworks. But I'll let you comment on that before I give the details, because they're quite fascinating.
Yeah, and just a couple of important contexts. Of course, if in fact you make electronic payments to a merchant, the bank clips the ticket every time, right? So actually, they make a lot of money on those transactions, despite the fact that it's very, very cheap for them to run the systems to be able to make it work. So there is a profit motive from the bank's point of view. The other point, of course, is the banks grizzle and say, well, cash costs. To which I reply, banks and cash are intrinsically related, always have been,
That's right.
always will. And it's fascinating to me that the only people who are saying that, cash is over and we don't need to use it is the banks. They're
Yep.
simply talking their own book. And then, of course, they get political cover because the politicians are not willing and able to go up against the banks, as we've seen over the years, every time. Governments sort of meander towards, regulation or control. The banks come, well, then, and then suddenly they turn turtle. So this is the continued process of the
And
banks.
how
Go on.
ridiculous is it? How ridiculous is it that the mandate doesn't, or well, at the moment still in force, doesn't apply to bank branches? They're mandated businesses accept cash, but banks are exempt from it as well. That's why you've
Exactly.
got these cashless branches.
Yeah. And I know that there's issues around transportation of cash and those things, which are important to understand. But it pales into insignificance when you look at it from the point of view of individuals and businesses, particularly in regional areas, who still don't have the digital communication capability to make digital payments and are still
Yep.
reliant on cash. Not because they necessarily want to use cash, but because they have to use cash because there is no alternative. And now, of course, with what I think 500 service stations, according to Sky, reported closed across Australia's largest states now, guess where they are? They're in the same regional locations too. So you can
Yeah.
see once again, it's the regional towns and locations and out in the bush which are once again being diminished by all of these policies. And I think more and more, my conclusion is that the bankers and the politicians are really actually only interested in the large communities, in the major environments, the conurbations, when in
Yeah.
fact it's something like 34% of Australia is beyond those areas. They don't care.
And that's, we are appealing to the best side of Australians' nature here, because the politicians don't. The politicians are like, we will buy off our section of the public. The majority of people live in the city, so we'll gear our policies to look like that we're sucking up to them. And screw the rest, their votes don't matter. And the Citizens Party is determined to change that. That is wrong. I mean, it's bordering on evil, that kind of approach. And now we're in a position like this, because I tell you, if you didn't care about your regions and farmers now, until now, you better start caring about them, because the same fuel crisis that is going to stop fuel from coming to Australia is going to stop ships with food from coming to Australia. You're going to rely on them, absolutely. And they need to grow that food. They need the support of public policy, right? And that's why something like this becomes, as a microcosm of the fight, it actually becomes quite big. So let's go through what happened, though, because people need to hear this. It's actually quite extraordinary. So first of all, I'm going to start off with a confession. I thought this issue of the disallowance motion was going to die a slow death. And it's because it's a little bit arcane, a little bit abstract. You're trying to tell people that that we're trying to get rid of something, a fake mandate. So you need to tell people to tell senators to vote for something, which is a disallowance, right? So it's already a little bit confusing there. We had put out the word repeatedly, okay, the disallowance motion's been put in, call your members of parliament, call your senators, tell them to vote for it. In the last few weeks, though, our party necessarily had to spend a lot of time highlighting another issue you and I talked about not that long ago, which is the ASIO issue, right? It's a really urgent issue, and this is a really terrible bill that's still, once this is over, we'll be back onto that. So anyway, last Friday, Senator Malcolm Roberts' office, Richard in his office, called me and said, what's happened with that? Because the vote will be coming up in the next sitting, and this week is the first week of the two-week sitting. And he said, it's actually coming up on Tuesday. And he did not know what the numbers were, right? And he was asking me, and I said, okay, well, we better swing into action and do something. So on Monday, knowing the vote was Tuesday night, Monday morning, we swung into action. We put out a statement. We mobilised our supporters around Australia. Now, as you know, Martin, our supporters are quite battle-hardened over many years. They're very used to this. They're very good at it, right? So we mobilised them to spend 24 hours making phone calls and sending emails to coalition Greens and independent senators. We got Dale Webster did her thing. Jason Bryce of Cash Welcome has like a petition with 200,000 signers on it for a cash and banking guarantee, right? So Jason put out an update to his signers on that petition, right? And so with instructions on what to do, call members of parliament. We put out a bunch of videos on all the social media platforms, a quick video saying, this is what's happening, you got to do something. And clearly it worked. It generated enough heat that by yesterday afternoon, Richard called me excitedly to say, we've got the numbers. The Greens and Coalition had told Senator Roberts in the chamber they were going to vote for the disallowance motion. He said, but the government's trying to avoid the vote. And this was like, oh, really? So suddenly we're in the realm of parliamentary shenanigans. And trust me, there is lots of scope in parliament for shenanigans. We've seen it many times. And remember the infamous passage of bail in Valentine's Day 2018? There were shenanigans afoot that day, right? The government played all sorts of dirty tricks to get. So we're in the realm of dirty tricks. So what happened was, starting around 7:40, in the evening, the motion came up for debate. Now, Senator Roberts got up and gave quite a lengthy speech, but a good speech about the significance of this and why it has to be defeated, this fake mandate. As he's speaking, Martin, on the Labor side of the chamber, he was being abused. And I mean abused. And you could just hear it. And you could hear it more because there were so few people in the chamber. And there was Labor senators, they're all women for some reason. They were over there and they were just hurling abuse at him nonstop. And I'm thinking, hang on, it's like, this is a bit strange. And I consulted with Dale and she said, you know, I'm not surprised, because if they lose this, this is going to be really embarrassing for them. And, you know, there's their egos at stake here, that they could lose an actual vote. And that might be true, and I'm sure it is true, but I'm still wondering if it's because of an even bigger issue, right? That they are really, Chalmers and the banks carefully crafted this crappy thing, right? And it's about to be taken away from them in a way they never would have predicted. So they were getting all this abuse, but Malcolm soldiered on, and then they got up to speak. And I noticed a couple of things. One is they weren't talking to the issue. They were just hurling ad hominem attacks at Malcolm Roberts, at the opposition. I mean, hurling them. That's what their speeches are about. And the speeches went on and on and on and on and on. And I'm thinking, why? Like, this is This is not like the 1900s anymore, where politicians used to compete with each other who could give the longest speech. My hero, King O'Malley, who founded the Commonwealth Bank, Martin, back in 1909, he gave a 5-hour speech in Parliament on banking. 5 hours nonstop. You can actually read it, find the Hansard and read it. That used to be normal back in the day, but they've got all sorts of things now, like guillotines and whatever. And this is unusual. These speeches were going on and on and on. And then Slade Brockman, the Liberal, got up and he confirmed that the Liberal Party was going to support the disallowance motion. He didn't speak for that long. But I had met Slade Brockman on the branch closures inquiry. He's a West Australian senator. He'd attended the WA hearings and the Canberra hearings. And I could tell that he was very much influenced by that inquiry at the time. In the Canberra hearing, he really put the banks on the spot about cash. Right. So it was good that he was in there to speak from the heart. And then more of these Labor senators got up and they were going off. And just the same that they would say a few token words about the actual issue. And then it was just hurling ad hominem attacks and going on and on and on. And then at 8:30, all was revealed because, now let me just paint the picture. When the debate started, Slade Brockman was in the chair. So in the Senate, the president, they don't have a speaker, they have a president, but the president doesn't have to preside over all the sessions. And so there's a pool of senators who take turns filling that role, right? And so Slade Brockman was in the chair, but he wanted to participate in the debate. So he started in the chair and then he left the chair and he went to this Liberal side so he could participate in the debate. And so he was replaced by Senator Karen Grogan, who was the leader of the Labor senators who had been hurling abuse at Malcolm Roberts. Now she occupied the chair. Now in that position, she was being much more polite because she has to be measured and look impartial as a chair, but she'd already shown her colours on what she thought of this issue, right? So come 8:30, she interrupts the Labor senator who was speaking at that point, and she says, it being 8:30, hard end to this debate, I move for an adjournment, Senator so-and-so, and straight away gave the call to one of the senators who got up and changed the subject to something else. And that was beginning what's called the adjournment debate. And once that started, that other debate was over. But I'm thinking, where's the vote? They've had a debate. It's gone for 45 minutes. Where's the vote? And then Malcolm Roberts' office informed me that One Nation Senator Sean Bell was standing on his feet to get the call so he could move that the motion be put, which means move to a vote. And that senator occupying the chair, Karen Grogan, deliberately ignored him so that she could end the debate without having a vote and move on to the next debate. This was, in other words, these long-winded, vitriolic speeches by these senators was what the Americans call filibustering. They were buying time to avoid a vote. This was their whole strategy. And that's why they had to fill it up with all this invective and vitriol and ad hominem attack, because they didn't even know the issue about cash, let alone be able to speak to it, right? Nobody knows the issue about cash better than you and me and Dale Webster and the Citizens Party. But I'll say second to that is Malcolm Roberts' office, because they've worked quite consistently with us on this over many years, right? They know what they're talking about. These Labor senators, they've got no clue. That's why they couldn't talk to it. And you look at what I just saw, and I'm thinking, and a lot of people have said it, my wife Elisa said it, Dale said it, I think you just alluded to it, this is how democracy works, right? You're supposed to have a due process in Parliament. This is how it works. That's how desperate they are to stop this going to a vote. Now, we're recording this it's now 5:30 here on Wednesday afternoon. It is scheduled to be voted on again tonight. That's what's scheduled. But there is another debate before that, and it could easily be knocked off the time again, right? And Labor will be intending to do that. The deadline for an actual vote, Martin, is Tuesday next week, the 31st of March. That's when it has to be, there's an actual deadline. But One Nation is concerned, or Malcolm Roberts' office is concerned, that what the government is trying to do, the reason they're trying to wind down the clock here, is because they have rigged it that if there is no vote on this disallowance motion, the disallowance motion lapses and the regulation remains. And that's what's afoot right now. And my last comment on that is, think about how big a deal this vote, this actual cash mandate must be if the government is so desperate to protect it. Think about that.
Oh, well, it just shows you that we've touched a nerve, a really, really big nerve on this one, right? And the more it goes on, the more we talk about it, the bigger the pain for the government, because of course the government doesn't want to dance against the banks. They want to dance with the banks. And you know,
Yep.
the banks are pulling the strings, of course, as always on this particular issue. And it's worth saying, of course, that this disallowance process and the timing out and everything is a broader issue too, insofar that it is now effectively a piece of policy that's in there, which gives the Labour another way to get their own will.
Yeah, and yeah, it's the most undemocratic part of Parliament. There's actually been many inquiries in recent times talking about how this is overused now. The Labor government, I don't think the Labor government ideologically is any worse than the Liberals. I think the pox on all their houses. They're all near Liberal fools who have sold our country down the river. But Labor's particular style is this government has become the most secretive government in Australian history, completely lacking in transparency, right? That we've forced issues onto them, which they know they have to respond to. They can't ignore this. I mean, it was the funniest thing was these women on these Labor senators. If you believe when they did talk about the cash issue, if you believe them, they're the greatest champions of cash in history. As you know, they were doing nothing to save cash before we made an issue, right? Absolutely nothing. But that's because they're trying to put the onus on Malcolm Roberts by saying, hang on, we've come up with a cash mandate here to save cash, and you're trying to get rid of it. You're the enemy of cash, right? It was all quite bizarre. But look, just to conclude this, as of right now, pay attention. If you can go to the Citizens Party's website, citizensparty.org.au, for daily updates on this. Well, and I'll be recording our show tomorrow, and it'll go up on Friday night on YouTube, and so there'll be an update of sorts on that. But unless we say that, unless you hear that this vote has happened one way or another. Until next Tuesday, if you've been involved in this, please, and if you haven't been, please get involved. Go to the aph.gov.au website, click on senators and members, and email and call your senators from your state who are in the coalition and the Greens and the crossbenchers, right? And say to them, please vote for the disallowance motion. Because one of the things the government will be trying to do behind the scenes is cut the Greens off from the herd, I think, right? The Greens are probably the weakest link here. The government will be trying to wheel and if they've indicated they're desperate about this, and that's what I find the most surprising. So they'll be trying to wheel and deal and offer something for the Greens to break from the coalition and One Nation and actually vote with the government on this. So they'll be doing all sorts of tricks. We need to make sure that those senators all get called and their support for the disallowance motion gets consolidated. Because if we pull this off, not only are we severely embarrassing the government, which is not my that's not my motivation. That's none of our motivation. We're here for actual policy outcomes, but more importantly, we're taking away a swindle. We're denying them a swindle on the public, and forcing them back to the drawing board where they have to address this issue properly. Now they're not going to want to do that, but it means that we've taken away their ability to say, "Oh, we've dealt with that. That's no longer an issue." It keeps it as a live issue where we can go back and say, go back to the Senate inquiry and implement those recommendations. That's where the solution lies.
Absolutely. Well, I made a show some time ago calling the long con cash issue, right? Because the government is running a long con. They want to be
Yep.
seen to be doing something whilst not doing something. And this is very, very important. So, folks, pick up the phone, send those emails, make a fuss, as you've done in the past and very effectively. So, this is
Very
now
effectively.
another opportunity to do that. And we'll keep people updated. Robbie, thank you so much for the update on this. And I have
Thanks,
to just
Martin.
say, shame on Parliament for being so low but also well done to you and your party for keeping everybody honest, and to the regional, you know, it's really, really important to understand how much the regional itself, that wonderful publication and the journalists supporting it, absolutely heart of this as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good on you, Dale. Thanks for that. And of course, thanks for your support. We'll make a great team. So anyway, stay tuned, people. Let's take this one down to the wire.
Thanks, Robbie. See you soon.
Thanks, man.